And I am you.
And you are me.
It's just a crazy storm.
Hi everyone, I'm Peter.
And I'm Felice.
Together we've spent half a lifetime travelling to just about every corner of the world, making a living as travel writers out of what we like doing best.
And that's skiing, biking, hiking, eating, exploring, city breaks, and a whole lot more.
Action Pack gives us each week the opportunity to share with you on the show some of these great experiences and the amazing people we meet along the way.
You can find out more about us on our website, actionpacktravel.com. Also, in the show notes, you'll find lots of detailed information about each episode.
So let's go straight to the action. This week on our travel podcast, we're talking to Jimmy Carroll, who, with his business partner, Georgie Mackay-Lewis, turns your wildest holiday fantasy into hands-on reality. Super yacht voyages to the end of the earth, intrepid journeys into deserts, jungles, polar regions, and the depths of the ocean. You choose, and these guys plan it for you. No matter whether you're a couple, a family, a bunch of friends, or a corporate group, their aspirational company, Polaris, makes it all come true. Such adventures, of course, don't come free of charge, but if you've got the funds, and you'll need quite a lot of them, they'll set about transforming your wildest travel daydream into a real-life experience. Jimmy, welcome on the show.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.
And however did this all come about?
A question that we're asked a lot, and I think it really is born in our previous careers for both Geordie and I, and that was that we were both in the British Army and served in reconnaissance regiments. And we actually met in the foothills of the Hindu Kush in Afghanistan. So there's a travel story in there at the beginning anyway. And then we went off and did various different roles in the army. Geordie did two tours of Afghanistan, I did two, but I also managed to squeeze in a tour of Iraq as well. And then we decided actually it was time to leave, and we'd had our fun and experienced a lot more than we probably bargained for. And Geordie went off and ran a electronics company across seven different countries in Europe and was constantly on the move. And his passion for travel was starting to play out in that. And then decided to move into the travel arena, looking at very high-end expeditions and yacht expeditions. I took a slightly different course. I became events and sponsorship manager and team manager for the largest ever medical research expedition to Mount Everest, which was called Extreme Everest 2. That was looking at intensive care research. Absolutely fascinating. And we shipped 14 tons of equipment out to Nepal, built three laboratories, one in Kathmandu, one in a little place called Namche Bazaar, which you first go up to when you start trekking up to Everest. And then the final laboratory and essentially operating theatre was at Everest Base Camp itself. And it's incredible, really seeing Sherpas carrying, you know, five times their weight on their back, yaks bringing tents and liquid nitrogen up to Base Camp, and living up there for 3 months, which is actually the longest kind of period that anyone really lives there. And we were there well before any of the climbers that season. One of my fondest memories was actually spending the first 6 days on Everest Base Camp and being the only people there. And it was incredible. It was just utterly silent. And I say that because everyone says, surely it's quite an empty place. But actually, during the climbing season, there's 1,500 people or so living at Base Camp. And, you know, and Base Camp is on a glacier. So it moves. Every year it's in a slightly different location. Whilst you're there for 3 months, it's moving. You're waking up one morning and realising that there's a meter and a half crevasse underneath your tent and having to repitch is an enlightening moment, definitely. So that was a fantastic experience. And then I moved into a very different world and worked for one of the world's largest brands, sporting brands, and that was to be the global tour manager for Manchester United Football Club, involved in the commercial deals behind their international tours and then the actual delivery of the tour. And again, incredible in a different experience, that taking 137 people on a tour, 27 of which were footballers, and then all the ancillary attachments such as Manchester United television sponsorship and all of that. And we took them all around the States. We went to Los Angeles, Denver, Washington, D.C., Detroit, and Miami. Fascinating to see a global brand like that. And then just to finally really give it the eclectic mix, I decided I wanted to move back to London, and I was very lucky to be headhunted for a role in Barnes, right on the river, and a stunning location for the office. And that was as the head of marketing for a design studio called Winch Design. And they are the designers of the world's most luxurious super yachts and private planes, and also architectural projects. And this was really my foray into the super yacht world. And actually, whilst in that role, there was a big change in the super yacht industry, and that was people with wanting to experience far more than what the Mediterranean and Caribbean had to offer and really start to embrace the explorer concept. And so explorer yachts have been on the rise for a number of years now, but I was speaking at the Global Super Yacht Forum about the rise of explorer yachts, and certainly from a design perspective and what you could do with an explorer yacht. And I was being heckled from the audience, this rather tall, dark-haired gentleman at the back who I couldn't see because of the bright lights in my face, and came up to me in the end of the talk, and it was Geordie. He had just led a yacht expedition to Svalbard, and we got chatting, and we hadn't seen each other for 5 years since leaving the army. Really, that was probably where Polaris was first kicked off, and really we decided actually that there was a couple of opportunities within travel. The first one being in land-based travel, and Polaris, we call that private adventures, and really that it should, every focus should be around the experiences you want to have. And ultimately, the last thing we think about is where you may sleep at night, because if needs be, we'll build a mobile camp, and it could be to five-star luxury in the middle of nowhere in order to facilitate the best experience, which would be in that location. And we'll operate all over the world. And in the same context, that actually the yacht market didn't have a huge amount of competition in it for the more kind of verified client who wanted to explore. And so we set about setting up two businesses, and that was Polaris Private Adventures and Polaris Yacht Expeditions. They're built on the military planning model, and we've changed that and we've bastardized it into a travel planning model. But that's the foundations of how we work now. And we ask a series of questions through that of each client and each project, which then allows us to leave no stone left unturned and drill down into every element and really understand how the client lives their lifestyle, what they want to achieve from their experiences, how they want to go about it, and then the best way in which we can make the experiences happen for them in each location that we go to. And I think the final part to it really was that after launching those two parts of the business, we're having so much interest from our clients who had corporate entities and their own businesses. And they were asking, gosh, what can you do for us in terms of a corporate side? So we launched a Polaris agency, and that really is a B2B channel. And we look at corporate experiences for incentive and retentive travel, but also do a lot of work with luxury brands as well. So we're doing product development and product launch. We launched a new watch, a luxury watch brand last year, and then also brand lifestyle experiences. So taking brands, clients, and their most loved clients away on experiences for them within the brand.
So can you tell us about a typical trip? For instance, you mentioned to us one to Morocco.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was actually on a corporate side, the first one that we did. The context about that was that actually the corporate wanted a break away from going to a hotel ballroom or conference rooms and doing their once a yearly meetings in a very bland, sterile environment. And so we started to talk to them about what do they stand for, what makes them tick, who they are, actually what do they want to achieve from it. And we started to build in and realize that actually if we could build certain elements of challenges into it, change the environment that they're going to be seated in when they do their more corporate get-togethers, and actually show them a new environment, that would be the best way to go about it. So we went out to Morocco. We looked at various different areas close to Marrakesh, the Agafay Desert, and then also the Atlas Mountains as well, two very different environments. Actually, we created this journey for them, which every part of the movement of the trip was a different experience. So that we got them straight out of Marrakesh of the airport and into the Atlas Mountains. As soon as they got there, they were doing a walk and a hike through parts of the mountains, stretching their legs out, getting the fresh air in the lungs, which they, there's suddenly thrown into this completely different environment, which they just, I think, slightly shocked them a little bit, but also really enlightened their senses. And then they came back in and had an amazing lunch and get together, and that was their first entry. And then it went through, and we built on that every day. So the next morning they got up and they had a mountain bike ride, but they didn't go back to the property that we were staying in, because they were met then by some dune buggies that picked them up at the end of the mountain bike. The dune buggies, which they drove, took them towards the Agafay Desert, and then there was an amazing lunch overlooking this incredible vista. And we started to point out these different areas that they were going to see miles, miles off in the distance. And then they got back in the buggies, drove off a little bit more, and then got onto camels for the final approach into this desert camp that we'd set up for them. And that was going to be their home for 2 nights, of which all of us are surprised to them. And then the next day, they got into predator dune buggies, which are muscled up, great big beasts. And they did a challenge, and they had to drive each other and a race through the desert. And we had a jump competition, who could get the most airtime. And then in the evening, we fell back into this camp, and we had an astronomer come down who gave them an amazing lesson, gazing into the stars. And then they had a bit of a corporate session built into that. And the final day was up really early, and they were up at 4:30 in the morning, and driven out by 4x4s. And they were all kind of hazy eyed, some strong coffee delivered, and we delivered and dropped them off at this hot air balloon site that we had picked. And they got up in the hot air balloon for a breakfast in the balloon for sunrise. Actually, it was incredible. I've done a number of hot air balloon rides now, and this was probably one of my favourite, because there was a cloud base in, and I had never had one with a cloud base before. The spectacle of a hot air balloon is incredible as you rise up through, and it's the most serene and peaceful travel I think there is. But actually, having cloud there, you hit the ceiling, you go through the cloud, and it gets quite chilly, and then you pop out the other side, and you feel like you are in just a completely different planet. You're up above the clouds looking over, and it's just magical. There's no one else there, just floating. You know the ground is thousands of feet below you, but you can't see it. And it's just pure beauty and tranquility up there. And then the clouds started to shift, and you could see Marrakesh off in the distance. And then giving this perception of actually the Atlas Mountains from above. And so I think that's a really important part, that at Valoris we try to look at everything asymmetrically. So that's subsurface, either be it in land or sea, on the surface, and then in the air. And so they'd already been on the surface, they'd been walking, hiking, mountain biking, driving the buggies, and they'd seen it all from the ground. And then to put them in the air and just float serenely above it was just something else. And then to finish the journey off, as we landed, we had a fleet of motorbike sidecars waiting for them, and they all got picked up, and we took this long drive, 2 hours back into Marrakesh, in and out of all the surrounding villages and little towns in motorbike sidecars. It was brilliant. So many giggles had, and beaming smiles. It was fantastic. And then into the madness of Marrakesh and out. So yeah, a fascinating journey.
So then I think you did a treasure hunt in Namibia and Angola.
We did. Never before we had a brief like it, and I'm not sure we will again. This was four girls who'd known each other for years from school and growing up, and they were starting to get to the age where one of them was married, two more were getting married, and possibly children were going to be coming along soon. And so they wanted to test their friendship, really go back to where it all started. So we got thinking and said, okay, we'll take a brief from them. And that was great. And we understood quite a lot from them. But we actually then got in touch with all of their partners, their husbands and boyfriends, fiancés. Really started to ask these different people who their partners were. So I asked them about their childhood, asked for pictures of them growing up, and got all of this incredible information on them. And then we built it into a series of riddles and clues. And then we worked with some amazing people in Namibia, who then over 2-3 days, we put together this essentially treasure hunt. And at each different stage, there'd be a different riddle or clue that they'd have to work out. And so they actually went and had a fantastic experience with the Himba tribes women, and really embraced everything that the Himba tribe have to offer, and got involved in the body painting and all of that. And we managed through an interlocutor to really get some phenomenal access to them, far more than you would naturally get, and to spend a prolonged period of time. But the final part of this session with the Himba tribes women was that the main lady would then sing
this riddle to the girls, and they then had to work out, and part of the journey was where they went to next. And so as they left the camp, they were walking down the road, and I won't go into every single part, but you'll get a very good idea. There was an oryx skull on the dusty track they're walking along, and in the skull there's some parchment paper. Opened up the parchment paper, and on there was this clue of the next part. And essentially, they had to get to a radio mast. They had to climb it. As they were climbing it, this phone began to ring, and there was a phone just up on a platform on the mast. We could see we had spotters out watching. So just as they were about to get to this platform, the phone rang, and they answered the phone, and they said hello. And it was one of the boyfriends back in London, in the city, on a break. And we teed him up that when they were getting there, and he had to phone at the exact right moment. And they answered the phone, and they said, hello. And he said, well done, you've got this far. And they said, I think we recognise this voice. And he didn't give anything away. And he said, in the distance, you'll see at about 750 metres, there's a little village. That's your next spot. You'll have to make your way there and watch out for any dangers en route. I don't think we'll get another client saying we want to challenge our friendship as the initial brief. It really is quite a tremendous opening statement.
And you had a boys' trip you organised to Israel and Jordan?
We did, yeah, absolutely. And actually, that's been really popular. And we've had a number of other inquiries very recently about these boys' trips. And this was eight guys who have known each other for quite a while. And every 3 years or so, they try to do a big trip. And they really wanted to go and see the best of Israel and Jordan. But they were quite gung-ho. One or two had been in the army. There were some fragile elements to it as well, that actually one of them really hated heights. And so different bits of this we managed to piece together. And we used a couple of helicopters to fly them around. But the whole thing was unknown to them. So they didn't know any part of the trip which was going to happen. And each day they did get an envelope about what was going to unfold. And so they got in the helicopters and we flew out into the desert, and we worked with the Israeli Special Forces, and we put them into this Special Forces training compound and put them through a whole series of military kind of tests and firing weapons and you name it. Lots of loud bangs and explosions going off. And that really, really kicked them off for the start of what this adventure would be. And then they left there and they ended up having to go out into the desert and do some incredible climbing, which started to challenge, you know, a few of them on the heights element of it. But also they had to navigate themselves through parts of it. And our guides are with us, but they're not giving anything away. And then we flew them down to the border crossing. Originally, they thought they were probably going in the other direction towards Syria, but actually going up towards Jordan and then across into Jordan. And they went, and we had this amazing desert camp set up for them again. And then an element of, you know, camels and the natural kind of trekking that you would have. And then some 4x4 action as well before heading back into the cities for an amazing party at the end. But I think the biggest part was, and again, we used a hot air balloon there as well. And that certainly pushed the fears of heights for a few of them. But the biggest part was that they just didn't know any element of it throughout. They only found out that they were flying to Israel as they got to the airport, because we'd sorted everything for them before. And so when you have the surprise element, maybe there's a bit of anxiety, but we talk them through it, and that's when we host them and guide them. And so that abates any fears, but certainly adds an element of doubt into their minds of what's going to go on.
Do clients tell you their budget before organising the whole thing, or does it work the other way around?
The budget question is always a tricky one. Some clients do, absolutely. Other clients, we have to talk to them and build them through it. So actually it's rather easy that we offer a kind of varying scale. And so we try and always ask a client for a budget of, you know, a rough region of where they're going, so we don't get it completely wrong. But obviously, if you're using lots of assets like helicopters, that does burn up a lot of money. And helicopter time, though, can save you an awful lot of time on the ground. And so what we can propose is that if you use a 4x4, the journey may take 4 hours or 5 hours by 4x4 because of the terrain. However, in a helicopter, it could be a 30-minute flight. And when people can see that, they can then understand, you know, where their money's being spent and actually how best to spend it. It's always a tough question, budgets. And I think, you know, you've got to work with the clientele, and it's all about the relationship. And when they get that, they understand the trust and the levels of where money is being spent, and we give a line by line breakdown on that, then they can really see where they're getting their return on investment. And actually, we call it the experiential return on investment. I speak to a handful of clients and I ask them a question: who looks after the most important things in your life? Who looks after your finances? They have private bankers or wealth managers. You know, who looks after your health may have private healthcare. And, you know, what about property? Does someone manage property for you? And all of these elements are looked after. I said, who looks after your well-being and your downtime? And no one that I spoke to could give us an answer. So, well, that's what we do. We look to get you an experiential return on your investment. And this is, see it as an investment, these experiences that we're building, because actually they're creating memories for life. You're maybe learning new skills. You're creating, enhancing friendships and bonds with family members or friends, or even completely different people, especially if it's a corporate setting. And therefore, that element of life should be looked after so importantly, because actually we all work so hard, and the most precious thing to us is the time that we can spend with friends and family and experiencing new adventures.
Do you or Geordie accompany every trip? What's your job when you're there?
Yeah, so we host on average about 30% of our trip ourselves. Everyone else that we work with, we vet and, you know, do a lot of due diligence on. So we'd never send a client to someone that we don't trust or wouldn't go with ourselves when we're not hosting the trips. And then the trips when we do host them, certainly with the bigger trips with lots of logistical movements, it makes sense to host them just so we're on the ground and we've got that steadying hand. I think we're very lucky from our military backgrounds that we're mountain leaders, we're qualified divers, and various other skill sets that really enhance the hosting package. But also, we're doing a lot of photography and drone work and filming. And so a lot of the trips, we're creating amazing photo albums and full-on films. I just got back from India and we created a five-minute film for the clients that I hosted through India. We can always adapt and change the program. And that's the biggest thing about hosting. The client doesn't have to think of anything because we're on hand and we're looking at the weather each day. If the weather's slightly inclement, actually we can tweak and adjust the program. Or actually, even if the client's decided they've seen enough wildlife on the trip and they'd like to slightly adjust what the program says, we can work with our amazing people on the ground in each location, or with a yacht captain and the crew, to change the program and the itinerary. I think that's an incredible benefit of hosting. And also, on a selfish side, we have some great relationships with our clients, and, you know, they become friends on the trips that you host because you are living the experiences with them and you're taking them down into amazing rivers and streams in Papua New Guinea and Solomon Islands and floating down rapids and things like that. So you do create a bond with them, and that's why I think we're very lucky that we have a lot of repeat clients.
And then I think you did a birthday trip to Rajasthan.
We did, and that was the Indian trip that I just got back from. Actually, for that trip, it was for a 60th birthday present by the lady's son. And we worked with her son throughout to plan the trip. The beauty about that trip is that the client would never have thought of going to India at all. And so it was a very new environment for them. And I hosted that trip because that gave an added sense of security to them. It was three ladies. I had actually flown to Australia twice and talked them through a few elements of what we're going to experience. But a lot of it was to be surprise led throughout. And through the interview process with her son in the design stages, we really learned about his mother, about how she had this love for horse riding when she was a child, growing up on farms and in the outback, a real sense of adventure, but also that incredibly successful businesswoman, but really wanted to connect with where she went and have an understanding of the local culture and traditions, but also a spiritual connection. And so we went to Rajasthan and we created this amazing horse horse riding expedition, and it was an 8-day trip, and we're horse riding 4 days. And obviously, because we're in the middle of Rajasthan, away from any of the cities and town, we built a mobile camp, and working with the Indians on that was just incredible, because the level of service that they offer is just phenomenal. And you know, I doubt anywhere in the world could beat it. And this camp that we set up in the basin of these amazing mountains, and we rode in and rode out on the horses, and then we had this spiritual guru come and join us and stayed with us in the camp. He would tap into the clients and start to really find out who they were and unlock their spiritual awareness. The final part of the horse riding in the camp, we then had a puja ceremony, one of the local villages in the temple. And actually 4 or 5 villages from all around flocked in to come to the ceremony with us, and because of the guru is so well known. And it took the clients through this meditative state and then into the ceremony, and actually everyone started weeping with emotion and tears rolling down their faces. And it was an incredible sight, and the energy in this temple was just phenomenal. Days before, we've been riding through essentially desert landscapes and then through crop fields and what have you. India, for me, it's just, there's so much to go and see. And when you show someone a country which they never imagined of going to before, and we challenged them by taking them there, and they came out the other side gushing that they want to go back and embrace the culture even more, go and see other parts of India. It was phenomenal. And then actually only a couple of weeks ago, I sent them their edited film, and they all reunited back in Australia because lockdown had eased, and sat together and watched this 5-minute film of the entire trip. And I have received some amazing emails from them and WhatsApp messages, and I could just sense the emotion again coming back out through that.
What's been the biggest and most memorable trip of all for you?
I think the biggest trip, you know, India was certainly up there because of that emotion coming through, but the biggest trip and probably most memorable was to Papua New Guinea and the Solomon Islands using a brilliant yacht called Suri. When you charter Suri, there's a challenge on Suri that you cannot use all the toys and assets that are on board. And she's a true explorer yacht and has been all around the world and done Antarctica and multiple other places. And so we managed to charter her for the client in Papua New Guinea and the Solomon Islands. We took them on this experience which they never wanted to stop. Every day had to be action-packed. A family of 5 we took away, and they also had a tutor for the children. It was a 10-day trip, and every day was action-packed. And so we had them diving, we had them paddleboarding, playing with the sea bobs, snorkeling, and then going inland to have a conservation trek on this amazing island called Tetapari in the Solomon Islands, learning actually all the old methods of how they lived off the land, how they had medicine from all the plants, and then the conservation element coming through with turtle tagging, having them with the locals. You go along and you see the turtles in the water in these flat bottom boats, and you dive in on top of the turtle and you bring it up into the boat, and then you tag it and then release it back into the water. And the clients are doing this hands-on, not just viewing it but actually getting involved. Rainforest treks, and we went to see this amazing old tribal village essentially, which had only been found about 3 or 4 weeks before we got there, never been seen before. We trekked for kind of an hour and a half through the jungle up into this highland area, and you could see how these old tribes dating back hundreds of years, thousands even, have built up essentially ramifications and essentially a fort in the jungle, and little bits of stonework which they would have used for cooking and cutting with. And that was incredible because no one else had ever seen it before apart from these rangers that we're working with. And then into on the diving, once they became more confident, we then did a coral planting program with them. And I think this is really important actually, that a lot of clients are looking for purposeful and meaningful travel. We build in at every element now allow an element of conservation into our trips. We're very lucky to do the coral planting with that. But also we bought about 50 pairs of spectacles, and then we gave them to the local hospital. And that was incredible, actually, because giving people the opportunity, young children, to see properly, because they hadn't had spectacles before, it was fantastic. But also adults who had good vision and then had deteriorated, and giving them the opportunity to actually see again, their faces just lightening up and great big smiles. I've never thought about taking spectacles along as a gift to give people, but actually working with amazing people in the Solomon Islands, they said actually this is a really good initiative that they're getting behind. And every village we went to, the client wanted to try and give something back, and even if that's buying even sweeties and confectionery items for children or the spectacles, we always gave something to every community that we went to. They found that really important, especially when you're living on a great big yacht, a 68 meter super yacht. We had two helicopters. We bought in another helicopter to go on a New Year's Day trip up into the highlands, find incredible sinkholes and waterfalls, and land next to these fascinating features and swim in and around them. It was just brilliant.
And finally, how can people find out more about what you do and book a trip?
So our website is a really strong area to go to, www.polarisx.com. But most recently as well, people have been reading about us in Condé Nast Traveller. We took Condé Nast to the Solomon Islands last year. That's just come out online, but it was also in print in the April edition. And then social media. Actually, in the new world, we get a lot of clients through social media and our Instagram. It's an area of inspiration, and people go on there and find some of the most amazing places in the world that they can travel to, and then message us through Instagram, and then we start the conversation through there. So it's a fantastic platform to go to.
Jimmy Carroll, thank you very much for appearing on the show, and we wish you the very best of luck with Polaris in the future.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter and Felice.
That's all for now. If you've enjoyed the show, do please visit our website, actionpacktravel.com, or subscribe on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, or another of the many platforms that we're on. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with at least one other person.
And I am you.
And you are me.
It's just a crazy storm.